association that's supposed to watch over the ethics of a profession joins in torture, or at least protects those who join in torture. But all that was exposed by a movement from within psychologists, from within the American Psychological Association, with the help of reasonably good leadership on the part of the American Psychiatric Association, who said it was wrong for any psychiatrist to be in the room during an interrogation that could spill over into torture. Yes, that those were examples of malignant normality, not in Nazi Germany, but in relation to democratic United States of America. And with Trump, of course, malignant normality becomes the rule, because he's president, and what a president does tends to normalize potentially bad, evil, or destructive behavior.
Acclaimed psychiatrist and author Robert J. Lifton, speaking in our Democracy Now! Studio in 2017, in one of his many interviews on the show. You can go to democracynow.org to see them all. Robert J. Lifton died at his home in Cape Cod at the age of 99, survived by his partner, Nancy Rosenblum, his son, Kenneth Lifton, and four grandchildren. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO is loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 988 Oregon, a public service helping those who are feeling sad, struggling with alcohol or drug use, or just need someone to talk to. Trained counselors are able to listen and provide support 24/7. Confidential support available by text or phone call to 988. More info at 988oregon.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, Oregon union leaders endorse the Equal Rights for All ballot initiative.
Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson calls to release video footage of the Central Library stabbing because of a serious discrepancy.
And conservation groups warn about the impact on Northwest forests if federal officials roll back the roadless rule.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, September 8th, 2025. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Cheryl Denise. Oregon labor leaders are signing on to a campaign to update the state constitution to better protect LGBTQ and reproductive rights. This weekend was the 2025 Oregon AFL-CIO Convention in Seaside. The statewide union federation represents over 300,000 working people. Delegates from around the state voted overwhelmingly to endorse the Equal Rights for All ballot initiative. If passed by voters next November, the ballot initiative would make it clear that everyone has equal rights regardless of their sex, gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, or if they're pregnant or seeking reproductive health care, like IVF. Serena Roher is the secretary treasurer of the Oregon AFL-CIO. She said, quote, "We know that when we as workers do not have control over our own decisions and bodily autonomy, it affects our ability to work and organize effectively for the best working and living conditions. We also know that the same forces attacking our reproductive transgender and LGBTQ plus rights are the ones seeking to destroy our unions," end quote. The Equal Rights for All campaign is in the process of gathering enough signatures to qualify for the November 2026 ballot.
A Multnomah County grand jury has indicted three people for second-degree assault for their involvement in a stabbing outside of Portland's Central Library last month. Hours before the indictment was announced, County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson called on District Attorney Nathan Vasquez to release the security footage of the incident, saying what police have said doesn't tell the whole story. Vega Peterson has taken heat from business interests in the aftermath of the stabbing, saying she allowed the county library to become unsafe. Vega Peterson said, quote, "There seems to be a serious discrepancy between the video I saw, reports from library and security staff, and how this incident was reported by PPB, and subsequently some of the media. The public deserves transparency," end quote. She added, quote, "To date, what has been shared publicly appears to rush to judgment around a serious incident involving young black people, despite the existence of the video footage and statements that are more complicated," end quote. Commissioner Shannon Singleton also called for the footage to be released. Multnomah County DA Vasquez says he won't release the footage since it's evidence in the case. He also says that since the library is a county department under the chair's control, Vega Peterson can just release it herself if she wants to.
The Trump administration is moving ahead with plans to eliminate protections for millions of acres of federal forest land. Conservation groups say removal of the 2001 roadless rule could open pristine parts of Oregon's forests to construction and commercial logging. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Conservation groups say the proposed removal of the federal roadless rule would open pristine areas of Oregon forests to commercial logging. Adopted in 2001, the roadless rule safeguards nearly 60 million acres of pristine national forest land, including 2 million in Oregon, from road building and logging. Eric Fernandez with Oregon Wild says it's a reckless policy that would threaten areas around the Cascade Lakes, Columbia River Gorge, Mount Hood, the Mackenzie River, and many others.
It's where you'll find the best wildlife habitat, best old growth forest, hiking, fishing, hunting, and camping opportunities. The rescission of the roadless rule is the latest chapter in Trump's war on public lands and nature.
Federal officials say the rule's removal will help land managers better protect communities from wildfires. But research shows over 90% of all wildfires occur within half a mile of a road. A shortened 3-week public comment period on the proposed policy change runs through September 19th. Fernandez says the public process to create the roadless rule was extensive, involving 600 public hearings across the country. More than 1.5 million comments were collected, almost all of which were in favor of creating roadless protections. He says giving just 21 days for public comment to undo the rule is rushed.
That lack of process continues the trend of the Trump administration taking less time to do scientific review and taking the public out of public lands so that we have less say in how they're managed.
Oregon Congresswoman Andrea Salinas has introduced a bill that would codify the roadless rule into law to prevent future rollbacks. But Fernandez says it will take several years to work through Congress. Anyone interested in Oregon's public lands can comment on the roadless rule by September 19th. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
It's been 5 years since the disastrous Labor Day fires in Oregon back in 2020. A windstorm triggered 5 megafires, burning more than 1 million acres, killing 11 people, and destroying over 4,000 homes. Recovery and rebuilding is still an ongoing process for survivors. Oregon Housing and Community Services have helped support the rebuilding of over 2,600 homes over the past 5 years. The widespread crisis exposed vulnerabilities in Oregon's emergency response team. Emergency response leaders say they've learned some important lessons. Identifying and alerting vulnerable populations about when they need to evacuate is critical, and the state needs to do more to future plan for serious disasters. Governor Tina Kotek commemorated the 5-year anniversary of the fires, saying in a statement, quote, "The 2020 Labor Day fires were an unprecedented disaster that changed how Oregon prepares for wildfire and recovery. Survivors have shown remarkable resilience, and the state remains committed to supporting their path to stability. We've learned hard lessons and must continue improving our preparedness to protect lives and the environment we all depend on," end quote.
St. Agatha Catholic School, a small K-8 institution in southeast Portland, took back the enrollment of a student with same-sex parents just over 1 month ago. Now, several other families have pulled their children out of the school, and at least one teacher has also resigned. Plus, someone wrote a rainbow chalk message that reads, quote, "Let love be the loudest sermon on the sidewalk in front of the school," end quote. Reverend Lon Tron, the school's priest, took responsibility for the decision. Tron said, quote, "Ultimately, families who seek enrollment in our Catholic school must be able and willing to support the goals of Catholic education. This includes the ability to provide a home environment that has reasonable hope of supporting and modeling a life of holiness, virtues, and Christian discipleship in conformity with all the teachings of the Catholic Church." The other families who left say they based their decision on how the situation was handled, including a lack of transparency. One parent, Aaron McGibbons, said, quote, "We can't stand in front of a community that we love and our child loves and somehow say to them, this decision is something we can live with," end quote. Eighth grade teacher Sam Lloyd said he resigned from this position because it conflicts with his personal values, and he says he could not find a strong theological argument for it.
A significant security flaw in the University of Oregon's computer network was inadvertently uncovered by a former undergraduate student at the physics department. Owen Mitchum says he stumbled upon confidential information, including social security numbers, graded assignments, confidential donor logs, tenure evaluations, and passwords, and more. Mitchum says he was searching the university's Microsoft Teams account for budget figures for the physics club when he discovered the university's financial documents visible via files on a Microsoft tool called SharePoint. Mitchum believes the breach should have been a wake-up call to U of O for tightening up online security. In his mind, he had done the university a favor by alerting them to the security lapse. In the mind of the school officials, he violated school policies on acceptable use of computing resources. Additionally, the university's associate dean of students was not as understanding as Mitchum had hoped for. The dean believed Mitchum's actions violated the school's policy on acceptable use of computing resources and required him to write a 750-word essay reflecting on his role in the matter. The dean said that if the essay was not completed, he would face a suspension of his student account, preventing him from registering for classes or changing his course schedule. Mitchum didn't submit the required essay and promptly informed the university in writing, quote, "I am no longer a student at the University of Oregon. I will not be submitting a reflection paper. Enjoy placing a hold on my account. Best, Owen," end quote.
Some Senate Republicans say they're worried about RFK Jr.'s health policies. House Democrats stand behind Lisa Cook as a criminal investigation into possible mortgage fraud begins. And Democrats could face Electoral College trouble after the next census. With that story and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. Over the last 50 years, vaccines are estimated to have saved 154 million lives worldwide. I support vaccines. I'm a doctor. Vaccines work. Secretary Kennedy, in your confirmation hearings, you promised to uphold the highest standards for vaccines. Since then, I've grown deeply concerned.
Republican Senate Whip John Barrasso spent 20 years as an orthopedic surgeon and voted to confirm vaccine skeptic Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as health secretary. Kennedy's standing continues to be questioned after a Senate finance hearing where all the Democrats and some Republicans grilled him over the firing of the newly appointed CDC director and a growing multi-state measles outbreak. Polls show Americans across party lines support vaccines and trust them for their kids. The White House seems to be standing behind him, but others, including members of the legendary Kennedy clan, are calling for him to resign. Ron Wyden is the Democratic senator from Oregon.
It is in the country's best interest that Robert Kennedy step down, and if he doesn't, Donald Trump should fire him before more people are hurt by his reckless disregard for science and the truth.
Wyden and Maryland Democrat Angela Alsobrooks released a report about Kennedy's 200 days in office, charging it's been marred with higher health care costs, rampant chaos, and widespread disregard for effective health practices. Florida says it's aiming to end all school vaccine mandates, but several northeastern states are considering creating their own health agency to supersede orders from the HHS. Oregon, Washington State, and California are working on establishing their own vaccine policy. After an extremely weak jobs report, the Federal Reserve looks likely to cut interest rates at its next meeting. The chair had previously said the central bank was moving cautiously for fear of inflation sparked by higher tariffs. Meanwhile, the Department of Justice has announced it's opening a criminal investigation into Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook for mortgage fraud. This comes after President Donald Trump said he's firing her for getting a primary home mortgage at two addresses. Cook says she's staying and is suing the administration to keep her job. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says Democrats will stand by Cook.
The Department of Justice continues to try to weaponize the federal government against people who have declined to bend the knee to Donald Trump and his extremism.
Trump accuses Cook of cheating to get lower mortgage rates, the same charge he's used against several critics. Although that's against the rules, it is common, not typically treated as a violation of criminal law, and is rarely prosecuted. A ProPublica investigation finds three of Trump's cabinet members have multiple primary residences. Democrats could face challenges with the Electoral College after the 2030 census. Projections show conservative states could gain more seats in Congress at the expense of liberal bastions. That, at a time when critics within the party are already saying Democratic leaders have been ineffective at building a response to Trump's second-term policies. Michigan Democratic Senator Alyssa Slotkin says the messaging questions don't always have simple answers, especially with democracy itself under attack.
Is your job more than just the kind of puts and takes of a normal Senate, you know, the tools of the Senate? Or do you have a responsibility to lead? Do you have a responsibility to work with the legal community on the court cases that are going up?
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after the newscast for an in-depth report on the Labor Day protest at the Tacoma Ice Facility. Then we'll talk with the mother of an Oregonian on board one of the ships sailing to break the siege on Gaza. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 57 degrees. Tomorrow, look for clouds with a high of 74. Today in history, in 1974, President Gerald Ford pardons Richard Nixon for any crimes Nixon may have committed while in office. The quote of the day is from U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders. Born this day in 1941, he said, quote, "The problems we face did not come down from the heavens. They are made. They are made by bad human decisions, and good human decisions can change them."
The FBI is seeking other alleged indigenous victims who were exploited by an Alaska man who was indicted in July. With that story and more, it's Antonio Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Bureau of Indian Affairs offices in Wisconsin and Minnesota remain open after the Department of Government Efficiency targeted them for termination. As Danielle Kading reports, the initiative formerly led by billionaire Elon Musk had proposed canceling leases for several offices earlier this year.
The cancellations affected offices in Ashland and Shawnee in Wisconsin and Bemidji in Minnesota. Wisconsin tribes say the Bureau of Indian Affairs office in Ashland is a critical regional hub that processes land trust applications and provides education assistance and law enforcement support. Robert Blanchard is chair of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. He says closing the office would have been a hardship for the tribe.
We would have probably had to go maybe Minneapolis or some other place further away from us to get services.
Bill Broidrick represents the owner of the Ashland office. He says Wisconsin tribes adopted a resolution in opposition to its closure.
On that basis, the decision was made by the Bureau of Indian Affairs to keep the office open.
The Bureau of Indian Affairs says all three offices remain open. The agency says it's working to ensure adequate space continues to be available to support delivery of services to tribes. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
A site on Douglas Island could be the future home of a casino-like gambling hall due to a proposal from the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. The proposal was approved by the National Indian Gaming Commission. Tlingit and Haida says the facility's approval represents a step toward economic self-sufficiency and sovereignty for the tribe. KTOO's Clarice Larson has more.
The land is on Fish Creek Road, not far from Eaglecrest Ski Area on Douglas Island. It's just a small piece of a native allotment owned by tribal members who lease it to Tlingit and Haida. Tlingit and Haida spokesperson Dixie Hutchinson confirmed that the tribe is developing a gaming facility. The tribe intends to offer Class 2 gaming, which covers things like pull tabs, bingo, and slot-style electronic machines. The National Indian Gaming Commission's acting chair approved the tribe for site-specific gaming at the location in January. The decision came just days before President Donald Trump began his second term in office. For decades, federal officials and state officials in Alaska have said that native allotments owned by tribal members in Alaska were not considered Indian country. Therefore, they are not under the jurisdiction of tribes and cannot be home to casinos or casino-like gaming halls under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. But Michelle Jockathot Demert, a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Tribal Governance Department, says the legal interpretation of native allotments shifted when President Joe Biden came into office.
During the Biden administration, there was a solicitor's opinion that evaluated the laws and made the determination that the laws supported that Indian tribes in Alaska have jurisdiction over allotments.
She says gaming serves as an important governmental function for many tribes in the U.S.
You know, people look at it that it's just this big money-making operation, but it's so much more than that. It's an opportunity to make money and an opportunity to put that right back into your governmental system to provide essential services to your citizens.
Hutchinson says the project is still in the early phases of development. She says the tribe intends to reinvest the gaming hall's revenue into essential tribal programs and services. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
There are more lawmakers over the age of 70 than ever before in American political history. A political science expert says aging politicians in the House and Senate make it more difficult for political parties to establish stable majorities. Zamon Perez has more.
Age is becoming a liability for both political parties in Washington, as majorities are decided by the slimmest of margins. The number of aging lawmakers could impact the midterms and crucial votes going forward, according to political science experts. In the Commonwealth, Virginia Representative Jerry Connolly beat out millennial New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to lead Democrats on the House Oversight Committee. Connolly served less than 5 months in the position before going on leave for a cancer diagnosis he would later succumb to. Charlie Hunt with Boise State University says a reliance on older politicians is likely to make it harder to build stable majorities in a closely divided Congress.
Regardless of who wins the House next year, I can't imagine it's going to be by some huge margin. And so this is going to continue to be an issue where both parties might be putting their majorities into jeopardy if they are relying so much on these much older members of Congress who may have significant health issues.
The average lawmaker is now 57 and a half years old, but there are more members of Congress over the age of 70 than ever before in American political history. While age is an issue for both parties, the last 8 politicians who have died in office were Democrats. But Hunt says there could be potential pitfalls to completely writing off older lawmakers. He explains that sometimes a 75-year-old lawmaker is more effective than their 40-year-old peer because of raw experience.
Age does not automatically correlate to mental acuity or to effectiveness or skill. The other potential concern here by overcompensating is that age can bring with it institutional memory. You've spent all this time building relationships and developing expertise in certain policies. You don't necessarily want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Democrats have nearly double the number of lawmakers over the age of 70 in their caucus than Republicans, although both parties have similar average ages. I'm Simone Perez, Virginia News Connection.
Across 7 western states, a grassroots movement is underway to improve the health of rivers and streams using tools from nature. Low-tech process-based restoration uses materials such as mud, sticks, and stones to create a speed bump that allows streams to reconnect with their flood plans organically. Eric Galatas reports from Colorado.
Waterways in Colorado and across the arid West face increased threats from prolonged drought and other impacts of a changing climate, and a growing grassroots movement is using a low-tech sticks and stones restoration process to improve the health of rivers and streams. Instead of using heavy machinery, Ryan Messinger with the Yampa Valley Sustainability Council says workers use locally sourced natural materials to create a speed bump that slows down the flow of water. That work allows streams to reconnect with their floodplain over time.
You haven't really solved anything that day, but after a few years with nature interacting with what you've created, you're giving nature the opportunity to restore itself.
Messinger says the speed bumps create thin sheet-like flows where water spreads out into meadows and soaks into the soil like a sponge. Water is then released throughout warmer months, which can help maintain levels critical for wildlife, agriculture, and other users. Streams and rivers used to operate this way on their own with the help of beavers, but centuries of human activity have turned many waterways into fast-moving channels that dry up after snow melts. Joseph Lindhart with the Nature Conservancy in Colorado says partnerships with private landowners and local groups in the White River and Yampa River basins are set to launch 3 projects in coming months to recharge groundwater and help buffer communities from wildfires and floods. He says slowing down water also allows vital riparian vegetation to expand into the floodplain.
These little green ribbons that are running through a dry landscape can provide a lot of benefits for wildlife, and it also can provide better forage quality for any ranching operations that might be happening in the area.
The projects frequently hire local youth corps members, giving them hands-on conservation skills and an opportunity to build careers without leaving their hometowns. Messinger says he expects to see big improvements as the work is scaled up.
And that's what I always tell our volunteers and our youth corps that come and work with us. The work that you're doing, it's important not only for the small area that you've just restored, but it's part of a much grander series of projects that are going on that are creating resiliency throughout the West.
This is Eric Galatas for the Colorado News Connection.
New satellite data on pollution trends from 13,000 cities show that slashing fossil fuels helps both our health and our climate. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Satellites in space are enabling researchers to track air pollution on Earth and show that it's possible to improve air quality and reduce climate change at the same time. Susan Annenberg is at the George Washington University Milken Institute School of Public Health. Her team analyzed 15 years of satellite data from more than 13,000 cities worldwide.
So we can get a sense for how pollution is changing in every city on the planet.
They looked at concentrations of 3 pollutants that harm people's health and at emissions of carbon dioxide, which warms the climate. In more than half of the cities, all 4 pollutants rose or fell together. That's because they're often caused by the same culprit, burning fossil fuels. In cities that are burning more fossil fuels, like in parts of India and sub-Saharan Africa, concentrations of all 4 pollutants increased.
There is a lot of economic growth happening, there's population growth, and there are no strong emission control regulations.
Whereas in places that have taken steps to limit fossil fuel use, pollution fell across the board. so burning fewer fossil fuels can reduce climate change and improve people's health. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to a Fall Membership Drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Hannah Francis, Dave Johnson, and Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Zimon Perez, Edwin J. Vieira, Eric Galatas, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM,
and
K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Cheryl Denise.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our fall fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give. Or you can text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.